It's Wednesday, March 10th, 2010, and you're listening to episode 184 of Through the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 53 minutes.
Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Chad.
This is Wayne.
My name is Pat.
Hey, this is Chris.
And I'm Dave. Hey.
You're not Dan.
Hey, he's Dave. Close. No. He has two of the letters, right?
That's right.
I have far less hair, and I'm about half as tall.
So we kicked Dan off the podcast.
Yeah. We're like, Dan, you're fired. Enough of that crap of you being skinny and owning everything.
So you found another skinny guy who owns recording equipment, and you went to his house to record?
Right. Damn it. Well, at least you live closer, so. So this is Dave. We game with Dave.
We talk about
this
him a lot.
We talk the about Dave.
Yeah.
It's the Dave.
Yeah.
Every time I go on about how wonderful he paints minis, this is that Dave. Every time we talk about not playing board games with him because he beats us, this is that Dave.
Or if he's going to play Pirates with me.
Pirates, yeah.
To his credit, he actually is not at all happy with the recording equipment set up tonight.
This is going to be the best episode ever. And somehow I'm still going to lose. Dave, we absolutely love you. You have a genius brain. All right. You have this sort of game playing mind that can just deconstruct a game. It's awesome.
And we don't.
And we don't. And that's why you run what podcast?
I run, I am one of the hosts of the Iron Agenda,
mm-hmm.
which is a podcast dedicated to the minis game War Machine and Hordes. And we put out a weekly episode pretty much talking just about that.
Yeah, I hear your show's so much better now that you kicked Pat off of it.
Pat was on your show and then you fired him. What happened with that?
It's because he sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, he does.
Well, he never talked.
Yeah.
No. No, Pat actually kind of left us for you guys. So he got a promotion.
There you go.
Oh, no. It wasn't a promotion. I mean, he just cleans our shoes and buys us dinner. So
that's a promotion, trust me.
Wow.
I can only not talk on so many podcasts at once.
There's only so much of Pat to go around in that capacity.
That's true. That's very true.
All right. Well, Chris, you missed out on a wonderful meal we just had that is the exact opposite of everything we talked about in the Gamer Health episode.
Yeah, episode was 100.
Oh, my God.
180 and 181.
Well, yeah, I texted Pat. I'm like, what's going on? And he said, deep fried banana bread. That's what's going on, biatch.
Oh, my God. Imagine the wonderfulness of warm, moist banana bread encased in funnel cake.
Yeah.
Covered in chocolate, wrapped around ice cream.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh.
So this restaurant they went to, about a month or so ago, I happened to be watching the news, which I never do. That's why I said it was sort of a serendipitous moment because I happened to be watching the local news. And they said, coming up, a story about a local restaurant run, owned and operated by firefighters. I'm like, okay, that sounds interesting. So I hung around for the extra 10 or 15 minutes and watched it. And they did this little piece on it's a restaurant downtown, and the food just looked really good. And it's more your comfort food. It's actually cooked by firefighters from some of the local houses, and they make the kind of food that they cook in the houses.
Yeah.
And if you've ever watched any firefighter shows like, Rescue Me or anything like that, you kind of know these guys, they love to eat and they eat good food. So I'm like, oh my God, I got to try this. And then lo and behold, at the end of this news story, I recognize his voice, and it happens to be a guy that I went to high school with is one of the owners of the restaurant. So I'm like, oh my God, I've got to try it now. The only problem is it's in downtown St. Louis, and I live out in the county, which is about a 30-mile drive.
It's a 6-minute drive from my house.
And but Dave's house, it's like 6 miles away. So
we're not even recording in our usual recording studio.
Yeah,
we're
that's
recording,
right.
We're totally
shaking it up.
The Iron Agenda
setup. It actually sounds a lot better on my end. I can hear all you guys perfectly, so I don't know what the heck. So it's strange wiring wizardry Dan is doing, but you guys sound wonderful.
You know, I gotta say I love it too, because it is on my way home from work and about 10 minutes from my house.
Well, let's not even get into the fact that we're all lounging on couches at the moment, too. We're not sitting on folding chairs around a card table.
Plush leather couches.
Yeah, yes, plush leather couches.
So anyway, so we had this.
Yeah, but Pat's usually naked. You're going to let a naked man sit on your leather couch?
Yeah.
Well, okay, we've been recording on these couches for a while now, and so I basically went out and had to get a snow shovel to use as my man spatula. It's in the closet. I've had to use it a couple times.
Oh, man. But anyway.
That's the first time in 4 years on this show the term man spatula has been used.
But it
Thank
won't
you,
be
Dave.
The last.
Thank you for bringing the class of our show
I'm
up.
Kicking it up a notch.
You are. You are.
So yes, yeah, so that dinner. So yeah, Lafayette Firehouse. Firehouse number one is the name of the restaurant. Maybe we can get Dan to say put a link in the show notes to it.
Yeah,
so for anybody that's local or, hey, anybody that's coming down, possibly even the guys that are hanging around after Fear the Con, we could make a trip down there to the restaurant.
Yeah, so to give you an idea about this place, there's a tradition in firehouses. I've kind of heard of this before, where the chief basically picks someone and forces them to cook dinner, and you never know what you're going to get. So they have that on the menu, basically.
Yeah.
And they call it – it's like their dinner plan or something. And you go in, you order this. They won't tell you what it is you're getting.
The waitress literally would not tell you what was on the menu.
She wouldn't
give
you a hint.
She said no shellfish, and that's it.
It's usually chicken or beef. That's what she said.
Yeah, so I love trying new things. So I was like, okay, this is mystery food. I have got to order this. And what they bring out for me was basically a piece of bread with a giant hamburger patty slathered in chili, covered in cheese with like a salsa on top of it. Mm. Again, the opposite.
And this wasn't even on the menu, was it?
No, yeah, this is the
everything
special,
on this thing isn't on the menu. It was incredible. I would have never ordered it off the menu if it was on the menu. It's a really interesting concept.
I had the meatloaf sushi.
And I was going to say, I was almost going to do the same thing that Wayne did, except that, and Dave and I both got it, they had this meatloaf on there. It was meatloaf that has cheese and pepperoni.
And roast beef.
And roast beef rolled into it. And it's made sort of like a roll. So you get this cross section of this meatloaf that's got all this in it. It was rolled up awesomeness. Yeah. It was so good.
And in hot wings, giant pretzels.
Yeah. So we had, I mean, it was a great meal. It was a very good meal.
It was diet food.
I'm a little guy.
Yes.
Let's not beat around the bush. And I think Laura, my wife, was actually out there eating with us, and she had just about cut into her steak when my meatloaf was gone from my plate.
Yeah.
Yeah, you scarfed it down, man. Yeah. I was
shocked.
So
yeah.
Good stuff.
It was delicious. So, Dave, you game with us. And
not by choice, but yeah.
Not by choice, no. You're kind of the topic starter for Fear the Boot. You listen to the show.
Okay.
You do? No, you don't? You do listen to the show.
I'm trying to understand why this is topic starter, but okay.
Well, no.
I do something and you guys go and talk about it.
Yeah,
we talk about
it the next week. In fact, you even come to us sometimes and you're just like, oh, blah, blah, blah. That's not what I meant, or that's not what I said, or you told – I love the ones where you get me where it's like, you told the story wrong. So
Chad getting his details wrong?
Oh,
that wouldn't happen.
You know what the problem with details? They're just details. They don't matter.
They just get in the way.
Yeah,
that's right. Don't let the truth get in the way of a good story.
Exactly. Right, the truth of the facts. Yeah, screw them.
So everyone knows how I came into the group. I'm kind of curious how everyone else came into this
group. Yeah, like how did the group start?
The group started with you and Josh, pretty much, back in college.
And Josh is the other host of Iron
Agenda. Yeah, he's another host of Iron Agenda. Yeah. And I actually met Josh. I knew Josh growing up through a mutual friend of ours, a couple of them. And, actually we went to see episode one of Star Wars when it was first released.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. That's where we all met for the first
time. And we were talking.
That's where I met you.
And, it's like, we both role play. We should do this again sometime. Then we went back to college, went our separate ways. And a few years later, I heard he was gaming with Pat and Beth and invited me to game with them.
Mm-hmm.
So basically I joined their Star Wars group. And that went on and off for a while. And, we picked up War Machine as a side game. We played that for a while.
And then that's where I met Chad.
Yes.
Because I had not met Chad before that.
Well, actually, so the story goes.
I met Chad that way.
There's a story to this.
Mm-hmm. I don't doubt it.
There is a story. I was actually listening to your guys' podcast. This was back before I actually started hanging out with you guys, after I recognized, oh, crap, Dan's my fraternity brother's brother. I know that guy.
Right. And then you know his sister. And then you know his whole family. Yeah. Small world.
Dan was actually the last person whose family I met. But I was listening to one of your, I think, Daikon? Or Archon wrap-ups.
Yeah.
When you were talking about a demo that you guys did of War Machine.
Mm-hmm.
And like the next day, I went up to the store and you and Phil were sitting there learning the game.
Yeah.
Taught you guys how to play.
Yes.
We played for a while and eventually you and Luke, who also was playing War Machine at the time, kind of decided to start up a role-playing group.
You know, after all these stories, I've still never met Phil. I would love to meet the guy just once.
He's coming to Fear the Con.
Hammurabi is a wise man.
Yes.
Gaming with him was, for my first time, was an experience I will never forget. Never forget.
And you know what? I ran a years-long campaigns with the man.
Wow.
That's
impressive.
Pretty good.
Yes.
You know, coming from you, because I haven't been in a long campaign with anyone.
Am I the only one that hears some of the Phil stories and thinks, except for the heavy combat part, I could see Chad doing some of this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
What? No, no. The flying train, I shot the flying train down.
That fills the trains character. Are awesome. I mean, yeah. You got to love trains. Yeah. I like dinosaur trains.
How did we get you, Pat, into the group?
The role-playing group?
Into the role-playing group? I was already in.
Well, Fear the Boot, we stole him from Iron Agenda. Right. That's that's pretty much.
Well, it's like you said, it originally started, Josh and I were playing, because Josh and I, we worked together at that time. We still work the same company, but not in the same area.
And I'm going to cut you off here just 1 second. I'll throw this on the air, that my favorite role-playing moment I think I have ever had was a game Josh was running, interacting with Pat, making his Jedi character about crap himself.
Oh, that was good. I remember that.
Well, it's okay. Gamer story.
No, you put
it out on the table now. You got to say it.
It's nowhere near as funny in the telling as it was in the viewing.
Of course not.
They usually never are.
Yeah. But anyway.
You're not going to tell it, are you?
I don't want to bore people, literally.
Back to the story. Josh and I played with my original DM that I always mentioned.
Was that PW?
PW that I mentioned all the time. Because he was in Columbia at the time. So we'd make weekend trips to Columbia. We'd drive down on a Friday and come back late on Sunday night. So we'd spent the whole weekend role-playing. And then after we had met Dave, we sort of got together there. So that became the group, was me, Josh, and Dave, and my wife, Beth, and whatnot. And then that's when we met you. So you sort of got pulled in. And I'm a little cloudy on it because it's long enough that I can't remember. But basically, my son was born, so Beth had to stop playing. Then all of a sudden, Chad and Dan got introduced into it, and that's when we were playing Deadlands with Luke.
Right.
And that's the story that Chad can't tell right.
Yes, yeah. That's the one I get all the... Because it's all, you know, it's people and names and dates and places.
All that boring crap that sometimes
I'm biting my tongue.
Clogs up the story.
Because correcting you on the air would be a gaming story, and I just don't want to cross it.
It is hilarious, though, to game 1 week, do a podcast 2 days later, and we're basically talking about the game that we had just played without talking about the game we just played. And I'm sitting here thinking, we're kind of talking about Dave here, and Dave listens to the show. Am I saying something that...
Dave recognizes these facts when they arise.
It's like, I don't want to be mean, and I don't want to sound like I'm bitching, because I'm not. But how do I not sound like I'm bitching about Dave, and yet we still talk about someone who isn't here? But Dave's always a good sport.
One of these days I'll get the knife out of my back.
I need that back. So, Wayne, let's just put in that last final piece. How did you come into this gaming group?
Basically, I heard all of your gaming stories at work, not actual stories of games, but hearing about gaming. And then I started listening to the podcast, and then gradually I started getting more and more interested, wondering why nobody had ever introduced this hobby to me before. And essentially, you hand me episode 115, and I listened to that, and just after that, I'm hooked. It's like, I've got to try this. So you mentioned that...
you are a huge nerd, and I saw in you a facet of the puzzle that
you're
going
to talk
life.
About the missing void that you're trying to fill, aren't you?
Yes, I am. You were missing role-playing games in this nerd life that you were leading.
I thought the show wasn't always that homoerotic.
It always is.
No, you know what? There's that same element in it, because that story is pretty much the same way that Josh and I became friends, because, like I said, we worked together. And he started working and was sitting at a desk across the aisle from me. And we talked a little bit, but then something happened. I can't remember exactly what. I think one of our coworkers did the taboo thing of mentioned like role playing. And then all of a sudden, you know, there's this common interest that you just latch on. So Josh and I started talking, and we realized, you know, we're longtime role players. So that's, you know, how the ice was broken there. But it's just funny.
In my case, Chad just comes in one day. He's like, hey, one of the guys had to leave the group. Are you interested? Wait, I guess I should ask everyone else first. Hold on, I'll come back to you in a week.
I'll make a confession here. When Chad came to us, I was like, we're in the middle of a big story arc, and it's about to go down.
Pinnacle big.
Do you really want
to
bring a new person in right now, because they've got to catch up to speed?
And not only catch up to speed, but catch up to the entire concept of gaming.
Not only are we bringing a new guy in, we're bringing a noob in.
And you were absolutely right, Dave. You were absolutely right in that. But I didn't care.
Yeah, no. It's like, oh, and by the way, he's my boss.
Yeah. For some reason, that weirds everybody out.
That would weird me out.
Yeah.
It weirds me out.
What you're missing, it weirds normal people out, Chad. Everyone but you understands this. Even Wayne, like you just said, understands it. Yeah, like even if I was best buddies with my boss, I would never do anything on a social scale just because you don't want to take the chance of screwing that up.
I don't know. It's
you know what I mean? I mean, it can happen.
Yeah,
is what
I mean,
I'm saying.
Wayne's a guy. I'm a guy.
Well, true.
You know, it's just,
you know, yeah, he's a guy. I'm a guy. I understand. I know where you're going. Yeah, yeah.
Going on a slightly serious note. I think it's kind of the same concern of like gaming with couples. If the couple splits up, what happens to the game group? Who gets ownership?
You know,
it's like if someone loses their job or something like that, you don't want that kind of bad vibe to come to the game.
Well, and I think in your situation, too, you guys are comparable in age. I mean, you're fairly close in age,
too. No, he's younger than me.
Well, but
he's
I'm
under 30.
It's not like...
For another couple months.
It's not like he's 10 or 15 years older than you are. I think in a lot of situations where you're talking about your boss, quotes, you know, you're talking about somebody that's, you know, 10, 15 years your senior. Mm. I think that's the common preconception that people are probably thinking, you know, this guy's my
Wayne
boss.
Wayne and I have a lot of shared interests, too. I mean,
you mentioned that Wayne moved you to the cube closest to his so you could talk comic books at work.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I have this theory that the only reason Wayne hired me is because he had somebody to talk about movies with, and he had somebody to talk about video games with, but he didn't have anybody to necessarily talk about like other geek related stuff. And
no, pretty much. Sorry, met all those.
So he has.
So you're not that special, Chad.
No,
sorry.
Yeah. Not at all.
Well, you wanted to surround yourself with people.
You were just the side strange.
You wanted
all.
A buffer zone between you and sports.
He was building his geek harem.
Yes.
He wanted some. He wanted some geek on the side.
Because he hired me and literally put himself in the cube right next to mine. So.
Wow.
It was the first cube that opened up before he went in.
And I think he likes me.
No, there was nothing to it. There was no thought whatsoever.
Oh, come.
And did you know that we went to the same school?
Well, you're practically neighbors now, too. That's the other thing.
We went to the same college, and we didn't even know. So I go into the interview, and I forget if I've told the story, but I don't really care. But so I go into the interview. You know, I apply for the job. I worked for Scott Trade already, and I applied for the job internally. And so I go into the interview room, and I have my resume, and Wayne's there, and Wayne's boss is there, and they're both going to interview me. And Wayne's boss comes by, and he says, "Hey, man, I got to show some people around the data center. I got to do a tour. I'll be back in 10 minutes. That okay?" We're like, "Yeah, go ahead." So Wayne picks up my resume, and he starts paging through it. And he's like, "Oh, you worked here. That's cool. Oh, okay, you're in the ops. Or you went to Vatterott?" And I'm like, "Yeah." "And you graduated in 2006 and I'm like, "Yeah." "And you had these teachers." And I'm like, "Yeah.
I don't remember writing that down."
And he's like, "I went to Vatterott too." And then we both stop and we look at each other. You know, you do that kind of squinty eye and you turn your head sideways. And we both almost at the same time went, "I never saw you there. I don't remember seeing you."
Nope, I don't know you.
Oh, I thought you guys were talking about like romantic music in the background.
No,
hearts and flowers.
That came
up
later. That we had to develop that over a long period of time.
There was a courtship.
Mm-hmm. You actually think there's anything romantic about me?
Yeah.
No, I'm to the point.
That's what Chad says.
Yeah. We call him Grease Lightning.
Not my problem.
That's right.
Yeah, sometimes I do wish this were a video podcast because some of the facial expressions everyone misses out on. Just the look on Dave's face just now. Mm-hmm. Pat's hand gestures. I mean,
so before we descend this podcast into any further depths of degradation here, let's talk about wargaming and specifically wargaming as it relates to role-playing games, because Dave is pretty much a wargame expert.
I know one game.
Yeah, well, no, you know War Machine really, really well. Mm-hmm. You know Mordheim really well. If you know Mordheim, you know Necromunda.
Basics of Warhammer.
Well, we've also
the basics of Warhammer.
And this is the Battletech podcast. You know, we've got Chris on here. We've got Battletech. So we've got very strong roots in wargaming. You know, I think some people look at it as totally different and it's a totally separate thing from role playing. But
it's
you know, what
the,
about
the genesis?
What about the merging of these, or is there common ground or whatever? You know,
well, the genesis of role playing games was wargaming. I mean, that's what Gary Gygax and Arnson, that's what they did. They did the wargaming, and then they just kept bringing more and more what we now consider role playing elements to wargaming. And they kind of shrunk wargaming down and then brought out these more interpersonal elements, even though Gygax said that he doesn't care for the theatrics so much. You know, he planted the seed. Him and Arnson planted the seed, and it just grew from there, and people just took it and ran with it and started adding more and more and more of those elements in there. But in many role-playing games, you still see the wargaming roots. Like in D&D, I mean, of course, is the prime example. I mean, D&D, you can use a lot of miniatures, and there's a lot of tactical elements to the game.
Yeah,
it
seemed like for a while there, it looked like a lot of these games were going back to their roots of that.
You know, even games that aren't necessarily that old, you know, like Savage Worlds definitely points out the fact that, granted, it's a bit more abstract in the combat sense, but it certainly can be used in that regard.
It actually started in that regard.
That's right. It was
the Great Rail Wars.
Rail Wars, that's right.
And I would actually go so far as to say, like, even a relatively recent game, Spirit of the Century, what many consider to be a narrative game, there are very narrative aspects of it. Its combat is set up in a way that, even though you don't use miniatures, there is kind of a gridded element and that sort of aspect to scene building, that sort of stuff in combat.
And Dave, you like using miniatures in role play.
I do.
Especially the combat aspect.
Yeah, I do a lot because I'm a very visual person.
Yeah.
A lot of times when I make a character, I do one of two things. I either start with the stats as like the concept of what I want them to do eventually, or I'll start with a picture or miniature they either have painted or seen online. And I think that's really cool. I'd like to kind of personify that, and I go backwards from there. I'm not a picture with stats, but that's where I start with.
Right.
You know, you must have cringed when we were talking about putting the minis out and it being like a Final Fantasy scene.
Not really, because in some games, I mean, if that's what the game is meant to do, I'm fine with that, and I'm okay with that. I mean, if you want to roleplay heavily, I actually run on Sundays, I play in an Earthdawn game that does a very similar thing. I mean, there is some pretty heavy role-playing, but a lot of times when combat starts, the role-playing stops. And not everybody wants to have that division. Yeah. But if that's kind of like status quo for the game, that's what everybody expects, it's okay if that's what you want.
Well, how do you accomplish that, though, with a game like Earthdawn? Because some of the talents in that game are, in many ways, role-playing dependent.
Oh, well, I'm talking specifically about the combat ones. Like, we have a troubadour in a group, as well as I play a warrior. And so, yeah, the troubadour does very little in combat as far as actual talents go.
Yeah.
And he uses a lot of stuff in role-playing, but he's also not high enough, we'll say it's circle level, but to get the stuff where he can do it in combat. And when he does, I'm sure that character, because that player is a good role player, will start role playing more in combat.
Let's explore that a little bit. If you talk specifically about wargaming,
okay,
what are some ways that you can add more role play into wargaming? And is that even something that you'd want to? I mean, I imagine if we're talking War Machine or Games Workshop games on a competitive level, obviously that's not what people are there for.
Yeah, I'd like to see you try to bring that to a tournament.
Yeah, yea, verily, I smite thee. You know, it's like, no, just shoot your damn bolter and get done with your turn. But if you're playing amongst friends, like when Necromunda came out, you know, I played with Dan and his brother Tex and a couple other people, and we screwed around with the idea of adding RP elements to Necromunda, because Games Workshop has a very detailed world that they make. There's a lot of story and backstory, and this was before they might have had role-playing games earlier than the past couple of years, but I don't know what they were. But we decided to play Necromunda and do role-playing with it. Like, not while we were moving the models around, but Necromunda is a game of gang warfare in the hive, in this sort of big industrial complex sort of thing.
Giant underground shithole.
Yes, that's pretty much what it is.
Just like the fantasy version was the fantasy destroyed shithole.
Right, yes. A literal hole that...
Pretty much.
Yeah. So with those gangs, you know, you have like 6 to 10 gang members. And we decided to come up with personalities for the gang leader. And then we would role play the gang leaders. Well, you know, that was good for one session, but then the gang leaders start fighting and they don't like each other, so they're not going to talk to each other anymore. So that kind of killed it. And I've never really found a good way to bring that heavy role play element to a specifically miniatures game. Do you think that there's a way that can be done?
Doesn't it make it harder with so many of your characters dying so quickly?
That's one problem. Another problem is just so many people on the table.
Yeah.
But honestly, I'd look at it from a perspective of, I don't want that. Mainly because I do play some like larger scale games.
Yeah.
Now, I think that Mordheim and Necromunda are probably the exception here. Because
skirmish games.
Yeah. Like you have...
Or Battletech.
The new game, Malfo.
Is that the steampunk one?
Kind of.
Yeah. Steampunk zombies.
Pulp City is a hero-based one where you have maybe 5 guys.
I enjoyed Pulp City. I played some betas of that.
The only downside of that is there are fixed characters. You can't really make your own.
Yeah.
But when I'm playing a war game, I don't want to have the role-playing elements because I feel like it would get in the way.
Do you feel that way for a role-playing game? I mean, obviously you don't, but how come the logic on that doesn't reverse?
Well, because when I'm playing a war game or a miniatures game, mm-hmm. when I'm sitting at the table with someone, the goal of both players is to have fun, but your mm-hmm. objective is to win. And in that sense, the rules are simply a medium for you to interact with your opponent mm-hmm. and a you versus them. A role-playing game, no matter how much you use miniatures or what kind of Dwarf Forge dungeon you set up on the table,
yeah.
in essence, it is a mostly cooperative game, with the Game Master being the lone exception.
That is a really good perspective on it. That basically puts to words one of the reasons I didn't really think the two mixed too well together. I mean, aspects of it go great with each other, but there is that competitive versus mm-hmm. collaborative mm-hmm. nature to it.
Now, that's not to say that everybody who plays war games are cutthroat and competitive.
No,
I mean, I have a ton of fun and laid-back board games, but mm-hmm. in that situation, or not board games, miniature games.
Miniature games, yeah.
But in that situation, I mean, it is, in essence, you are trying to defeat the person across from mm-hmm. you or throw the game to teach them how to play, but that's a different topic.
Now, yeah. when you talk about it from that way, you know, when you're talking about a war game, it is, you know, it's competition between two people, and then you've got your role playing. But, and Chad, you mentioned it just a minute ago, mm-hmm. the one that I had success doing this with was BattleTech.
Yes.
We actually ran a campaign that was based in the BattleTech world where mm-hmm. we essentially, as the group, we played a mercenary group yeah. that was basically sort of starting from scratch, and we had a few mechs, and we were taking jobs, making money, finding mm-hmm. stuff, this, that, and the other. And so our combat was against the GM, obviously.
Yes.
So we set up these battles, and we do it. And so it's not just like, you know, I'm sitting down and playing a BattleTech tournament where it's mm-hmm. me against the guy across the table. But what I liked about it was is that what it allowed me to do was is it allowed me to meld two things that I loved a lot. I loved yeah. BattleTech. I loved blowing robots up, and sure. I love role-playing, and, you know, you can sort of meld these two. And it is, it's an amalgamation. It's,
right.
it's not pure of either one, but you can do a little bit of both. And I think that you can, you know, you can do that with War Machine, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be just like what you're doing, the skirmish, you know,
I
across the table,
it,
but you can take some like, elements there.
Let me ask one yeah. question, though. When you're playing your BattleTech game, how many mechs do you control?
Yeah, exactly. Just one.
Not necessarily.
When you do the
ones.
Mech Warrior and then combine it with BattleTech, and you're playing with
you have
a group,
your pilot.
Yeah, your pilot.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the general thing. I think that's the thing that Dave's hitting on here. When you're talking about War Machine or 40K, you're talking about 100 minis on the table, and everything, they don't become the same, but there's sort of a homogeneousness to it.
On top?
So in that perspective, because, I mean, I understand what you're saying. I'm with mm-hmm. Pat on this one. When I get in a situation, whether it's a tactical level type of war game, you know, I'm always applying, if not verbally, in the game to my opponent than I'm mm-hmm. mentally doing. I'm imprinting some sort of personality aspect on these people. Doesn't matter,
yeah.
you know, it doesn't matter where what the situation is. But even in a larger scale sense, for someone like me, I'd be doing the exact same thing. You know, if it's this battalion of troops over here, or if it's a squad of troops over here, I'm still going to imprint some sort of personality on there, and I'm going to essentially end up integrating that into the gameplay. Granted, it's not going to give me any bonuses, but for some reason, it enhances the play for me. You know, because, yeah, you can move around and things look cool and you can destroy this unit or you can suffer these casualties here and you have to pull back. And that's one thing. But it adds a lot more to it when there is a personality to it. You know, whether you're goofing around with it or if you're being serious about it. For me, there's always something more when you add that element to it, whether it's in the rules or not.
That actually kind of hits on one of the reasons I don't like it in a game like War Machine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's because War Machine has a lot of fluff. I know Games Workshop does this as well, but War Machine yeah. is just what I have more experience with, and that's
sure.
only why I'm using an example. But, you know,
both
War Machine
games have great backgrounds.
Tons of fluff.
Both of them.
Great
do.
Characters.
Yes.
And that's the key point I want to hit on. When you play a War Machine game, and it's like this was Games Workshop too, there are known characters that you are familiar mm-hmm. with and kind of
Hell,
understand their
whole novels.
Yeah, right.
About.
That you put on the table.
Yeah.
And it's hard for me to be them. And I think that that's because it's the same reason that I don't like fan fiction, is because I don't think that anyone does their interpretation
yeah.
of a character as well as the original author.
You know what bugs me
there.
About that aspect, though? When I play uh-huh. War Machine.
Well, have you read all the stories?
No, I have not.
All right, then.
But what bugs me about it is that I'm playing a War Machine army, and it has a named character with a background. They've written books about it,
yep.
and I'm familiar with it. I like the character. And then you're playing an army that has that same character in it.
Yeah, that is kind of jarring.
And they explain it away. They said, oh, there's magic, and there's imposters roaming the land, and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, there's only so many imposters of a guy who can bring comets and dragons out of the sky and melt people's
right,
bones
yeah.
inside their bodies. I mean, What do we have, a race of imposters here that can do that?
And that's why you didn't get that with things like Mordheim or Necromunda.
Yeah.
Because while you might always have, I'm playing the guys from City X, and you're also playing the guys from City X, they're led by different people.
Mm. I think that's why I like Mordheim. I'm not going to say I like Mordheim Necromunda better than Warhammer War Machine. It's apples and oranges. But that is one thing that I really liked about both Necromunda and about Mordheim, is that when I'm making my army, there's a blanks that I can put in a name. My characters. And as simple as that sounds, and as goofy as I've made my names, it adds a little something to that.
Going back to something Pat said, though, Pat, you were talking about basically when you're playing these things, it's like you're against the GM when it comes to the combat part. Don't you risk actually setting that up as a mentality for your whole game? None of us feel like we want the game to be us versus the GM in a regular role-playing game. But if you're playing a role-playing game and then you cut to a minis game for combat, and that actually is what's going on. It actually is you versus the GM. Don't you risk that rolling over into the role-playing?
I'm going to say no, just from my own standpoint, because I don't read too much into it when I say this. It's us against the GM. I'm just saying, as in any regular role-playing combat, you get to the point where in your role-playing game where all of a sudden you have a fight.
Right.
It's the GM that's running the bad guys.
The many seem to bring a little bit more of
that's what it was.
You're using it as shorthand of our side versus the GM's side.
Right.
Not us
because usually, like I said, in a War Machine game or a Battletech, it's two people playing.
The nature of the minis game seems to bring out some of that competitive nature, though. Mm-hmm. Not a bad thing. It's what it's intended to do.
Well, if it's a good game, it's doing that. Let me ask this question. And Chris, I'm going to ask this question to you because you're obviously a Battletech fan. You have a lot of experience with it. You're also a pretty competitive person, but you're an excellent GM. And I want to say, so you're running a game and you don't necessarily want to pop players. You don't want to kill players. You don't want to necessarily do TKPs, but you do want to run a tactical game. Say maybe you're doing a Mordheim role-playing game, and then when you go to combat, you're doing the Mordheim combat. You're playing full Mordheim with it, or you're playing full Battletech, whatever. How do you run that? As a GM, do you run a collaborative story game when you're role-playing where everybody's on the same page and you're trying to build characters, you're trying to build this story, and it's not competitive, but when you lay those miniatures down, when you lay that terrain down, when you lay that map down, does it suddenly stop and become competitive? Does it become, okay, we got this story, the story's cool, and they've got their objectives, and I'm running the bad guys, but you know what? It's on. Does it become like that, or do you have to pull yourself back and make purposeful, in-character, tactical mistakes? Do you have to purposefully leave openings for them, not to make it easy on them, but because that's what the story dictates? And maybe you do want to do that on purpose, because maybe you have a grand finale planned out next week, and having the scouting party accidentally wipe out your crew would kind of be dumb. What's your take on that, Chris?
The short answer would be yes. Yes, you would do that. Though I was never in that particular kind of situation where you flip from either or, at least from a GM standpoint. I know in the past, on the player's side of things, our GM did do that. And I would do that as well because, yeah, even though you've essentially switched type of game from role to board or war game, it still ultimately is the story. That's still the overriding theme that's going on here. And if you don't stay true to that story, despite whatever your competitive impulses might be, you're going to end up ruining the story as you may have originally designed it. Now, granted, you know, that some GMs may not have a problem with it. They might just roll, you know, I would imagine, Chad, would roll with that punch and change whatever happens based on what happens on the on the board.
I have to say that one time when I was running a Battletech campaign that had map and role-playing, I did it one time where I'm like, everybody wants to run a big war game sort of thing with lots of people. And I go, okay, you're doing a combat drop. You're going down with the army. You're combat dropping from space, and they're firing on you. I'm just going to roll a quick percentile dice to see what percentage of your force makes it. And the intention was, yeah, sure, I'll knock off 15% of the force. Just say it. And I roll the dice in front of them, and it rolls like 98% killed. And I'm like, holy crap. And everyone was just staring at it, and their mouths were like on the floor, and their eyes were as wide as saucers. And I'm like, let's roll with it. And they're like, okay. And we just kind of went forward with that.
You know, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I mean, I guess it all depends. Really, it comes down to how much the story you created matters to you. You know, and if it really is that essential to you, then absolutely, you should, quote, make the appropriate mistakes to cause that story to happen. Now, granted, I'm going to say that, though, with a caveat that if you're not playing the personalities of your opponents correctly, where these people are not tactically minded, these, you know, they engage in these types of tactics regardless of the situation, not even realizing it's going to put them in harm's way, although you as the GM or the player might realize that, you've got to be true to that aspect of it.
You know, I see both sides of the argument. And the way I view it is a lame death is lame, but a lame win is meaningless. So if you have like an elite tactical squad go in there and they get wiped out by the scouting party of farmers based solely on bad rolls, yeah, you can role play that out, and that's maybe good once or twice, but you know, that is a kind of on the lame side, guys. But then again, if you're the farmers and you're fighting the elite squad of commando, mech warrior, Mordheim gang, superhero, whatever your flavor of the week is, and you knock them over because the GM is not bringing his game, it's meaningless. It has no meaning to it.
You know, I think one of the things that we're thinking right here is, from a war game perspective, you're thinking of the sides, you know, side A and side B are essentially about equal, and the battle is going to determine, you know, to see who wins. But what we're talking about is a GM preparing a story for, you know, a campaign setting for the players. And this is no different than any other type of a thing. As a GM, whenever you're deciding, okay, this is going to be the challenge that they're going to face, this is going to be the group they're going to fight, it's just a challenge rating or whatever you want to call it, you know. Yeah. You just have to determine, okay, well, this is the characters, this is what they have, these are the mechs they've got or whatever.
You're not going
to I need to create a battle force for them that is going to be not their equal, you know, it's a little bit less than they can, that they will win, that they will succeed through. Now, there's always a chance they won't, but, and I think that's the approach, instead of like what you're saying, Chad, is that, you know, you're pulling your punches as a GM or making them make mistakes. It's not really that, in the fact that you are beforehand putting together an appropriate level challenge of a force.
Is it limiting
and then you
it
play
all,
it legitimately.
Is it limiting it all, though, using like a minis game? Basically, when you're doing that in a regular game, you're the only one that knows the stat of this thing. If it was more powerful, well, suddenly it can have less hit points. But I mean, if you're doing a minis game that's established and you set this miniature down that has stats that everyone knows.
What if it doesn't?
Are you stuck to that?
Many of the games, such as Mordheim and Necromunda, we're going back to ones we know personally. Even a mech war, you don't know what the pilot stat is. Atlas is a rube.
Maybe he's
some ace pilot.
And Battletech is great, too, because you can always come up against clan. You can be fighting the clan mechs, and it's like, I don't know what these guys are capable of, and a lot of times
you
don't.
Is that a gun or a camera?
Yeah, exactly.
It's a really powerful camera.
But I see your point, Wayne. So yeah, you might be more familiar with it, but as the GM, it's your world. It's your story, and there's the creative license there. You know, as players in that, you have to be aware of that. It's like, well, you know, yeah, okay, obviously if I throw this guy against you and you know what his stats are, he's a pitiful weakling, but that's not the case. This guy survived three or four battles. He's actually better than this, you know, the regular stat guy or something like that. So
yeah, that was one thing with Mordheim, because every time they fought, since you were gaining XP and buying it, each one was getting better as you go along.
So or worse. You get knocked out, maybe break your leg, you're minus one speed for the rest of your life.
Yeah, so it's one of the things going in there, you wouldn't have any idea when it gets sat down. Versus like a war machine or something like that, where you kind of know what to expect.
Yeah. Right. We've kind of been approaching this from one aspect of, what is it if your party is taking place in the game directly? Mm-hmm. And I think that there's another use of war games in a role-playing game, which you haven't really talked about. And I think that the Warhammer universe is probably the best example for this, because there's both a war game and a miniatures game based in it. And that would be, you run war games, maybe a series of battles based on scenarios that are pre-dictated that the players themselves probably aren't even taking place in, but the success or victories or losses of the various sides impacts the game directly. Like, for example, if the Wood Elf force attacks a Empire force and wipes them out, well, all of a sudden, one city on the front has been, you know, suffering a lot of losses. They've been trying to supply the war that they're obviously losing, and that impacts where your players are going to go next.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if they were winning, they'd probably have a bunch of bounty and maybe even, I don't know, captured slaves. That's probably completely out of fluff for Warhammer. But the point remains that you can actually take the results of a war game that's not directly related to your players and put it in their game.
That would be cool that you have like your gaming group and then you have on a different night your war gaming group. And the, you know, it's a non-competitive war gaming group or something like that, but you would have this land that the party is role-playing in, but war is raging across the land and it's affecting things, and then the outcomes of the battles one night affect what goes on in the world the next night. I mean, you do a scenario to take a bridge and you have a party of wood elves, and guess what? The dark elves took the bridge in the fight. The wood elves lost that night. Well, now the wood elf party has to cross it, and what was going to be 15 minutes of crossing this bridge is now a whole gaming session of trying to get across this damn bridge. The only thing I could see with that is, like with the bridge thing, maybe it's not just one night, maybe it's a couple nights. Well, suddenly your world is out of parity. But
well, yeah. I think a better way to do it is be similar how Dan's talked about how he's done with his old Battletech games of roleplay, 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 and the next session he breaks out.
That was my idea.
Okay, well, he's talked about it. it was your idea. You're a genius.
Thank you.
So, but no, I think you can even do it with your roleplaying group as long as they enjoy that kind of stuff. Like if we were playing a game, and I'll use a War Machine example, and we're all, you guys are all playing Signarans, you know, going along the northern front between them and Kador, which is kind of like a Germany and Russian type conflict. Mm-hmm. Well, we want to see what happened. Maybe someday, you know, I'm the game master, but I'll have Pat play the Legion, a Hordes faction, which is might have an influence, and Chad, you can play the Kadorans, mm-hmm. and we see who wins. And it doesn't matter because you know, you're both players. There's no game master thing. It's just mm-hmm. you're going to play it out and see what happens, and then I'll take that and work that into the story.
Yeah.
That actually sounds like a really cool concept mm-hmm. to make kind of a dynamic world going around you where it's not just, this isn't everything coming out of my head running the game. Here are events that are happening that are completely even beyond my control that I'm just working into it.
Yeah.
On the other end of the spectrum, too, we played a War Machine game, role-playing game that Josh ran.
Yep.
That was absolutely great. There is a War Machine role-playing game that exists, right?
Well, it's
no.
Well, okay.
There was a game that was produced. Basically, actually, War Machine started as an RPG, I think. The world started as an adventure for D20.
Yeah.
And then it morphed into the miniatures game. I believe that's the correct order. They actually stopped producing the role-playing game a little while ago, and they're actually now working on their own in-house game, which they've hinted at being kind of like what we did, compatible with the miniatures game.
Yeah, and this game was so cool. I mean, it was just a knock.
It was a homebrew.
It was a homebrew, and it was a knock around, have fun sort of game. Yeah. And the whole idea was when you went into combat, you used War Machine rules. Mm-hmm. But you didn't use War Machine units. You made a unit.
Right.
We had so many points.
We had characters. We bought things.
They, like, our characters had a lot more hit points.
Right. We would have been Uber on the actual War Machine table.
You couldn't play these characters. Right.
But
because
you still stay to play.
Yeah. Because you didn't want the characters to crumble and die the first thing. So when he pitched the idea, everyone was like, you know, that sounds like fun, but nothing huge. You know, it's nothing we'd want to do for years and years and years. And
well, let's be honest, the game wasn't good because of the system, though.
Exactly.
No. Ush literally said I've got this idea, and it's more than a one-shotter. It's maybe going to take maybe a couple sessions,
three nights.
That's it.
Yeah.
And then it's going to be over.
And
I know at the end of it, for me, I was like, this is awesome. Do we have to stop?
At the start of it, I was like, this is fun, but, you know, it's a whatever. It's beer and pretzels. And by the end of it, it's like, I love the characters. I love the control I had over the characters. Mm-hmm. I love the combat because I was familiar with the rules and the
holy crap, that's something coming from you.
It is.
See,
well, if you think about it, it's not the math that scares me. It's not the rules that scare me. In fact, nothing scares me about it. I love playing War Machine. I love playing Necromunda. I love playing Battletech. But to me, there's a divergence between the role-playing and the combat. And I know that we can get into all kind of arguments about putting more role-play into combat and stuff. Maybe that is my fault. But for some reason, that really kind of gelled. It really flowed into the role-playing and into the combat. And I really don't know even how to explain myself here. I'm making myself sound like a hypocrite after preaching all this stuff for the past 4 years. But in that moment, in that time with that game, the combat, the miniatures, the role playing, it all worked. It all worked really great.
Well, and for me, it was just like I said before. I pretty much knew I was going to like it because it's like what I'd done before, like with the Battletech. It was the same thing. Here's War Machine. It's this mm-hmm. war game that I'm familiar with, and we're using its rules, and we're role playing with it.
Yeah.
So I'm like, hey,
and not
yeah,
only are
I
we
role
playing with it, I'm not limited by choosing units out of the book.
Right.
I make my own unit, not based on necessarily what was optimal. I mean, I did that a little bit, but I did what was in character, what was cool, what I liked, what I was interested in.
Yeah.
Because it was so, I mean, it was so homebrew, it was so open and freeform. And that was one of the cool things about it, being freeform. It was this odd mix of almost indie high role playing. I mean, Dave, you were playing an imp. You were going into voice.
I was.
Your imp
yeah.
was great. A gobber, wasn't it?
He was a gobber sketch artist who was fantastic artist. Could draw, like, throw down sketches like nothing.
Yeah.
But that was passé. Mm-hmm. That was so lame. The future of art was stick figures.
That's right.
But he was very bad at it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hearing about you going into voices in it, that just completely throws me. I've never heard you go into a voice for...
I think that's the only character I've ever actually done it on.
Yeah. What was it about this game? I mean, Josh is a great game master.
I think it was that it was a pretty much a beer and pretzels game to start with.
Yeah.
We weren't expecting high role play. We weren't expecting this great epic struggle, like this world-wrenching cataclysmic situation.
Yeah.
And so we got into it and we got an above average game and we were all so pleasantly surprised that we just ran with it.
Yeah.
You know, those are the kind of games you got to have every once in a while because we've all talked about the analysis paralysis and stuff. This is a game we didn't have any of that. Because,
that game
like
was
I said,
not epic arrival.
There was no, well, there's no expectation going in other than this is, you know, we're going to have fun with this. We're going to throw it against the wall and if it dies, who cares? It's to have fun. So, yeah, I think you got to have something like that every once in a while.
Do you think that's our problem kind of sometimes, that we have a little too much expectation?
We're coming in expecting this.
Hey, we're professional gamers here, so we think that it's going to be great.
We're coming
in
expecting this great epic when in reality, maybe we shouldn't come in with that perspective. I mean, the great epics are wonderful, and I really enjoy.
Yes. Does every character have to be awesome? Does every story have to be epic? Do we have to save the universe every day? Can't someone else save the universe sometimes while we just go do whatever?
Some of your best games, some of your most memorable games are going to be those throwaway little games that you don't expect anything from. Like, just like we're talking with here. I mean, we remember that game very fondly, and it was a three-session game.
Do you think part of it was the fact that that game wasn't written with longevity in mind? You didn't have to, like, build this long arc. It's like, look, here's three things. I've got, like, six events that are going to happen, and it's going to be a self-contained, cool story. It's not you don't suffer from pacing problems.
No, I think that can have a lot to do with it. I think it's a pacing issue, and I think also there's an emotional investment issue as well. This is why sometimes con games can always be so memorable, because you know that you've got either three or four sessions, if it's a short run homebrew, or if it's, you know, or if it's 4 hours, if it's a con game, that's your whole window right there. So the limits that you may put on yourself to go and do things that are more daring or reckless or that endanger the life of your character, those safety things come off.
And yeah, there's no reason to hold back.
No,
at that
there's
point.
Absolutely no
You've
reason to hold back.
You've got a small amount of time. Get it all out there.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Worst case scenario is you die, and what? You're out one session playing some backup character until the next game starts.
That means I have to go and get beer. The horror.
There'd be a race to be the first guy killed if beer was a reward.
Yeah,
it's like everybody who dies here at the gaming table has to go upstairs and hang out with my wife and watch TV and drink beer. Knife in the throat.
Yep.
Can I get waffles with that too?
Yeah, sure.
Waffles.
You know, one thing I do think is interesting though, when you have people who are predominantly role players going towards a role playing game, is the way in which they will, and we talking a little bit about this earlier, which is how they do, you almost subconsciously apply role playing elements to it, whether it matters or not. You know, and even in the online diplomacy game that we're playing,
I took Paris.
Well,
Hold on a second.
I've got to say this.
But
hold on, just a second.
I have to say this.
We have a rant
every goddamn week. Right before we start our role playing game session, I come downstairs because I was upstairs getting my gaming stuff. The guys are already around my table and they're sitting here bitching or blabbing about diplomacy for an hour before we can even start gaming.
I haven't bitched in weeks. I've been steamrolling whoever is playing France.
Okay.
Are you talking about Prime Minister Jean-Luc Wee-Wee?
I'm pretty sure I know every turn of this game that has happened since it started, and I've never seen the map.
You know, that was something I got a big kick out of on this game is right away I start getting a message from Chris, completely in character.
That's my point.
Three or four paragraphs. No. Completely in character as
and
President Jacques Wee Wee.
I'll back up Chris's point. And I mean, I mentioned how I don't really role play as characters when I play a character driven game like War Machine, but that doesn't mean I don't kind of see the events unfolding as they're played on the table. I'm just not identifying with one particular person.
Right.
And yeah, I think that that's actually a fun aspect of the whole wargaming thing.
You know, it is in that grand strategy sense. I mean, yeah, okay, we're joking. I mean, yeah, okay, my guy, I'm playing the Prime Minister of France, and his name is Jean-Luc Oui-Oui, but the... But the point is, though, is even that, yeah, even though I'm getting my ass handed to me, the fun part of it is, though, yes, it's fun to play the game, win or lose, but what really brings out the enjoyment for me is engaging in that in-character dialogue through these communiques, through these messages. Yeah. That kind of stuff just brings an extra element of fun to it that it wasn't even in the rules to do so.
Yeah.
Hey, Chris, did anyone other than me reply back completely in character as well?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Chad did. Dan has as well. Gosh, I'm trying to remember. Italy did.
I blew him off because he had Jean-Luc Oui-Oui, the Prime Minister of France, contacting the Kaiser, the Emperor of Germany, or the Kaiser of Germany, I guess it would be. And I blew him off because no one was allowed to speak to the Kaiser. And I had a diplomat speaking to him, and then it was completely talking down to him. It was great.
Yeah,
I mean, one of the reasons I like that Chris is having so much fun with this is even if I suffer from stage fright like I do, as a role player, when I'm role playing, you got to admit I'm entertaining other people if I'm doing it well. And that would please me as a player to know I'm doing it. And I think that's kind of like Chris's angle on this is even though he's having fun with it as well, the fact that other people are enjoying it makes him enjoy it even more.
Well, you know, Dave, I like your approach to role-playing because your approach to role-playing is something that I think that a lot of people overlook. Your main focus is everyone having fun? To me, I get this vibe that that is your number one thing.
Right.
Yes, there's other concerns. First foremost, is everybody having fun? And I think that a lot of other people, and myself included, get hung up in this, number one, am I playing in character? Am I running the game like this? Am I playing my character like this? Am I using meta too much? Am I doing... When it really should come back to not even am I having fun, is everyone, and I'm included in that everyone, is everyone having fun?
It's that shared momentum kind of thing, because if you're having fun and you can see that everyone else around you is having fun, your fun is instantly enhanced, and it becomes contagious.
I think that's what that was with that War Machine role-playing game we played, where it's just everybody really enjoyed the hell out of their characters. Everyone enjoyed the hell out of everyone else's characters.
There was no expectation of, I'm not doing this good enough.
Yeah, Everybody was having fun, and it just built and built and built.
Also the only campaign we've ever actually ended.
Yes, it's true. And that, I think, is a discussion for another day. So, Dave?
Yes.
Host of Iron Agenda, www.ironagenda.com.
That's correct.
I will have Dan put that in the show notes.
Yes, in case anyone didn't catch it, we didn't really give Dan the boot. He needed a week off. We wanted to give him a slight vacation while we're preparing for Fear the Con. He will be back next week.
Yep. And just allow me to say that, man, I had such a great time at Fear the Con 3. Everybody was so great there, and it was just a good time.
Chris, this actually is going to drop next week before the con.
Oh, man, I can't win for losing.
I know.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys.
That happens when you're old.
Yeah. I appreciate you guys letting me come on and actually talk to you on the air as opposed to, you know,
talking about you.
Yeah, being talked about and telling you things that have them misconstrued on the mic next week.
Yeah, this has turned out to a little bit of a Dave Love session after all of the talk about how many times you beat us at everything.
It's all right. I got the man spatulas. We're good.
That is so dirty. And with man spatulas, I think we're going to close it out. So, see ya.
Later days.
See you next
week.
Later days. Fear the Con 3.
That's right.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2010. Listeners are free to use the show in a non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.